Welcome to the program for Tuesday, September 25th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And all month long, we're bringing you on at Tuesdays at 3 o'clock, a special edition of Agency of the Month, sponsored by CenturyLink. For the month of September, it is the Homeland Security Department. And my guests today are Chris Kaminsky, and I pronounced it wrong to start out. And you coached me on this before we started, and I got it wrong. It's Chris Kaminsky.
Kaminsky, yeah. Uh-huh.
And he is Deputy Undersecretary for Management at Homeland Security and the Performance Improvement Officer there. And Mark Weatherford is Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity at the National Protection and Programs Directorate. Mark, it's good to see you, as always. Thanks for coming in today. My colleague Jason Miller joining me in the questioning today. Let's start with you, Chris. Talk about your role inside the portfolio that I mentioned that pertains specifically to cybersecurity.
Sure, and thanks for having us today. When the department was formed back in 2004, essentially what happened is that they took all the different lines of businesses like the acquisition and procurement piece, the budget and finance, the technology, and the people, and they all put it in one directorate. And so unlike many other of our sister departments and agencies, you really have that consolidation of the business lines of business all in one place. And so what we try to do is provide a service to other parts of the department around whether it's fiscal policy or, you know, helping them navigate the procurement aspects of, you know, going out in cyber and trying to acquire different things, or in the cyber skills task force, which is underway right now, trying to hire effectively in the cyberspace. So those are the kinds of things that we do.
Talk about that effort to hire cyber talent. I'll get Mark in on that too, because that seems to be what every agency and every vendor is telling me their biggest or one of their biggest challenges is to find people who can do the work.
It is. It's a very high priority for Secretary Napolitano, and we work very closely together, Mark and myself and our teams, looking at, you know, what are the skill sets that we're trying to encourage hiring at the department specifically, and really using the authority that the Office of Public or Personnel Management gave us last year to hire effectively and really bring that to bear in addition to what we're going to see coming out of the Cyber Skills Task Force.
Mark, are you finding talent within the agency that you can grow up and coach up into being the kinds of people that you need, or are you having to go outside the agency, or is there a combination of those?
Well, it's certainly a combination. We have a pretty talented workforce within DHS right now, and some of the challenges we have are keeping those the skills up on those and advancing the skills. And we are obviously recruiting from wherever we can, both from within the government, other government agencies, but also within the private sector. You know, one of the things that I focused on initially, in fact, one of my biggest priorities when I got here about 10 months ago was to flesh out my executive team with the talented people that we needed to run the organization. And I think we've been very successful at that. You know, we brought people from private sector and other government agencies in to the leadership positions within the cybersecurity and communications organization. And we're starting to see the fruits of that labor of having those come in. But, you know, at the lower levels, it really is kind of a mixture of wherever we're going. We're going where we can find the talent.
My colleague Jason Miller joining me in the questioning today.
I wanted to just step back. Chris, you talked about those special authorities. Now, I remember OPM put out the direct hire authority for several different job functions, and cyber was one of them. Are you talking about that, or did DHS get special hiring authority?
No, we had asked for specific hiring authority for the department, and we've utilized that to some extent, but not as extensively as I think that either Mark or myself would like to see. The Customs and Border Protection has done a very good job of hiring cyber expertise. They run the OneNet network for the department, so they have a little bit higher reliance on cyber technologists. And so what we're trying to do now with Mark and NPPD is really look at the skill sets that we need for the future. He's got a great leadership team that he's assembled. There are really strong professionals in MPPD doing the work right now. It's how do we augment that going forward?
Now, are you guys able to pay more, or is it a matter of again, the direct hire authority where you can pull people in without going through the normal process? Or what is it, what is special about it? Because I think a lot of, since as Mark probably knows well and you guys know well, every agency is looking for cyber expertise.
Yeah, good question. It's the latter. It's the ability to hire more swiftly. We don't have anything particularly in the money category that, you know, we're augmenting the normal GS schedules or SES. But what we are doing is we're able to cut through some of the red tape and hire more swiftly.
How did you make the case to OPM for that authority? Because as Jason said, everybody would like to have some of that.
I think it was really the recognition of the emerging role of DHS as the lead for the federal government in cyber. And as that came to the forefront, I think the administration itself was pushing hard for it. And, you know, John Berry and company were very open to that message when we came forward with it.
So it was kind of all the stars aligning kind of situation.
I think in many ways it did all come together in that respect. We need to be much more aggressive about how we use it going forward.
Mark talked a little bit about where you're going to find that talent. The successful people that you have, the people who are doing well, how do you keep them? Because as Mark said, you're looking at other agencies, they're looking at you, and vendors are looking at you to hire your people and then essentially sell them back to you. So how do you keep them engaged and keep them employed at DHS?
Well, I'll give you a sense of it. I think Mark also has got a lot of these folks working with him also that can also give you a good answer. From my perspective, it's we keep hearing interesting work. You know, Deputy Secretary Lute has often said, we want DHS to be a stop along the path for anyone that's serious about a career in cybersecurity in the government. And so we want to be, you know, in that same cadre as DOD, FBI, ourselves. You know, that if you're really serious about a career in this, you're going to stop at DHS and spend a couple of years with us. And what we're trying to do is provide interesting work that is on the front line. And I think for the department as a whole, mission is really what's attracting people to us.
That attitude, I think, is a very healthy recognition of the workforce today, especially the kind of workforce that would be engaged in cybersecurity. I heard a number not too long ago that the average 25-year-old now spends 13 months at each job. So the idea of somebody being there and that the federal government doesn't work the way that people have perceived it to for a long time makes a lot of sense. That strategy of finding people, giving them something engaging to do for however long they're going to be with you, does that, do you think, make a difference in your retention rates, Mark?
I do, and you know, Chris stated exactly right. You know, I think, and the way I pitch it to people when I talk to them, and I do talk to people all across the country, and is that DHS is an interesting place to work. I mean, when you look at the mission space that we have in cybersecurity, from working in the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center out on the operational floor, to working at U.S. CERT or the Industrial Control Systems Organization, you know, there's not many places you can go in the government or in private sector in the cybersecurity arena where you can get the breadth of experience that you get. So that really is a big draw for us. And you know, I would even go a little bit further than what Chris said in making DHS a stop along your government career. I talk to people and I say, you know, come and work at DHS as a stop in your private sector career. You know, getting into government, working here, getting a security clearance, and getting the breadth of experience across the government, and then going back to the private sector is a really good thing for the nation. I mean, that provides value back to the cybersecurity community at large.
The idea of the workforce turning as much as people perceive it to turn has been challenging, as we've talked about, for every agency. Do you expect that trend to get the churn rate to get bigger or smaller as time goes on? And what do you think the factors are that contribute to that? Mark, we'll start with you.
Well, that's interesting, and it's a good question. So we have had some churn at DHS, but I'm not so sure it's churned more than other organizations. I talked to a good friend of mine who has a small company in the security space. And he's actually had a 25% turnover this year in his company. And it's simply because there are so much, the technology is changing, the business is changing, and people can pay more money. Oftentimes, if you don't have to move and you can go make more money doing the same job, people are going to go and do that. And, you know, I don't think that we're going to see any less churn. But our goal, and my goal, personal goal, is to make the job interesting enough so that somebody that comes and offers a little bit more money, that our people aren't as tempted by that.
One of the things about the turnover, though, people look at it from the outside and see, for instance, you know, someone like Phil Reitinger leaving. And he was a political appointee. He'd been there for 18 months, 2 years. That's pretty typical. That's no one looks at that and goes, oh, that's surprising. But then when you start kind of listing off all the others that have left, and some people are for, you know, basic retirements, people moved across country, other people just wanted new jobs. I mean, I understand that working within DHS is real work. I mean, this is not like, you know, you show up at 9, leave at 5. I mean, this is a lot of pressure. How are you dealing with that, you know, at least balance the perception that, wow, that's a lot of turnover, and do you have to do something internally and externally so it doesn't maybe affect morale?
Well, so the morale issue is a good one, and, you know, you are exactly right. I've been doing this cybersecurity stuff for a long time in a lot of organizations, and I've never seen people work as hard as they do at DHS. So we go back. We have to create a work environment where people can feel fulfilled without burning them out. And, you know, when I got here, go back to that, I had a significant part of my leadership team was vacant. And I think, you know, going back to your point, a lot of that was just natural turnover. You know, I think some people made a bigger deal out of that than that really was. But we have the team in place now that are the career professionals that are leading on these organizations, and they are building, they're hiring the people, and they're building the team that is going to go into the future. So I have less concern about turnover. I mean, we're still going to experience it. There's no way around. In fact, I encourage it. You know, if somebody wants to go and do something else for a while, we always leave the door open for them to come back.
Mark Weatherford of the Homeland Security Department's one of the guests here for our special edition of Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're also hearing from Chris Kaminsky. He's Director, Deputy Undersecretary for Management at DHS. We'll continue our conversation on Agency of the Month in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by CenturyLink Government.
Let's see. Growing digital needs go here. So many different applications over here. So where does IT budget stretch to the limit go?
Fortunately, CenturyLink Government has an answer with its vast portfolio of cloud services so customers get the right mix of performance and features. CenturyLink. Solutions that work. Service you can count on.
For a free risk assessment, visit CenturyLink.com/federal.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
The year was 1930. The epic flight that had made Charles Lindbergh a superstar was in the history books, and the Spirit of St. Louis was in the Smithsonian. But Lucky Lindy had his sights on a new challenge, a non-stop flight across the U.S. To accomplish this feat, he needed more than luck. He needed a new plane. For that, he turned to Lockheed, where under his watchful eye, the Lockheed Sirius took shape. In April of that year, with his wife Anne Morrow Lindbergh acting as co-pilot, he took off from Los Angeles and arrived in New York City a mere 14 hours, 45 minutes, 32 seconds later. They'd broken the record by 3 hours. 60 years later, another museum-bound aircraft, Lockheed Martin's SR-71, crossed the country in just over 1 hour and took its place alongside the Spirit of St. Louis. Their stories are our stories. See them unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
At Kaiser Permanente, we want you to live well, be well, and thrive. Now, there's an app for that. With the new Kaiser Permanente mobile app, designed specifically for the needs of our members, you can schedule a routine appointment with your doctor's office, refill a prescription, check on your test results, review your medical records, email your doctors, all from your smartphone, directly and securely. Now, in addition to apps that let you find the local yogurt shop or post pictures of your dog wearing a hat, there's an app that lets you do something even more remarkable. It helps you stay connected with everyone who's important to your health and your family's health. Get the Kaiser Permanente mobile app at the Android Market or the Apple App Store, or bookmark kp.org on your smartphone. It's as easy as using a giant slingshot to shoot birds at pigs, if you know what I mean. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Apple is a registered trademark of Apple Inc. Android is a trademark of Google Inc.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Tuesday's Federal Drive. Military logistics faces two challenges, keeping the forces ready and not breaking the bank. Now the Defense Logistics Agency is boosting readiness by having suppliers shoulder some of the risk. The DLA will tell us about it. Plus, data analytics. What a concept. We'll find out why the government is spending billions on it. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, it's our special edition of Agency of the Month, the focus on the Homeland Security Department. And our guest, Chris Kaminsky, he's the Deputy Undersecretary for Management at DHS, and Mark Weatherford, Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity at the National Protection and Programs Directorate. And my colleague, Jason Miller, is joining me in the questioning. Gentlemen, we talked about the cyber workforce and the need that you have at DHS, and every agency shares that. But I'm curious, if we look back 3-5 years ago, it was fine to say we need more cybersecurity professionals, and that pretty much covered it. Now with so many specialties and so on within that area, talk more specifically, Chris, I'll start with you on this one, about what you need within the specialty of cybersecurity. What kinds of skills within that that may not be just the broad range of just somebody who's good at cyber?
Yeah, it really has shifted over the last several years to be much more specific in the kinds of the nature of the requirements and the kind of certification that we're looking for. It ranges from watch floor kinds of activities to analytics, forensics that we're tracking on both internal. It's the U.S. Computer emergency readiness team, being able to push messages to state and local officials across the country as threats come in, and that ability to work with the private sector that Mark has done so effectively are the kinds of things that we're looking for in terms of skill sets. I know Mark's hiring these folks on a daily basis. Mark, what are some of the other things you're seeing?
Well, so certainly the core technical talents that we need are, those are fundamental to everything we do. So, and much of it is not, things you learn in college. They're things you learn by banging on a keyboard and breaking it and then having to fix your computer over and over again. The people that what we really look for, the really valuable talent are the people that have those deep technical skills, but they can also analyze an event. They can analyze, they see something happening, and they can kind of think like bad guys do maybe and say, okay, if I saw this doesn't look normal. What is happening? What are they trying to do here? What is the goal of what I'm seeing? So, you really look for people that maybe, look at problems differently than a normal engineer might look at a problem. You look at, and it's kind of one of the weird things about my profession is we're always trying to figure out why do things go wrong? Why do bad guys do bad things? So these kind of skills, many of them are kind of skills that you can't be taught. They're skills that take a lot of experience.
It sounds like you're describing analytical thinking, somebody who can do that. You use the term analytics, and I'm wondering if there is now a convergence, or maybe it's been around for a while, of the amount, the kind of work that you're doing and the amount of information that you're having, so that there's this intersection of cybersecurity and big data. Is that fair to say?
I guess I never thought of it from a big data perspective, but you could certainly say that. It really is. It is certainly a convergence of deep technical skills and being able to think through problems in a logical fashion. And sometimes problems that you've never seen before. You know, in fact, that's where the big discoveries come, is that we figure out things that no one has ever worked on before, no one has ever seen before.
Well, and maybe I wonder, too, if it's not sometimes cases of where you're not even sure that it was a problem before that you needed to analyze in the first place. Are there instances of that?
Yeah, and that maybe go back to your big data thing. You know, we see things, and then we can go pull data back from months or even years ago and see trends and see, you know, paths that may not have been obvious, you know, with one shot. So certainly being able to look at big chunks of data and data from a variety of different sources is a big component of that.
One of the things you described, as you described the type of skills people need, is the idea of soft skills versus hard skills. And I think one of the criticisms the government has had, not just DHS, but the government wide, has had is too many soft skills, writing reports. And I know that came from the FISMA and the generation of certification accreditation. But it sounds like you still need some of those soft skills, but you need harder skills. Are you finding that people are coming to you now, or colleges and universities, or industry, you know, as people apply, coming with those harder skills?
So, great question. And, you know, that is probably that's the piece that's, I won't say it's missing, but it needs a lot more emphasis within both higher education and just within the technical community. There are a lot of people that have, you know, a familiarity and even have some skills in cybersecurity. But, you know, with someone with the kind of really deep core technical skills that I'm talking about, you know, to me, oftentimes they're worth five of somebody with good cyber skills in the soft arena. You know, those are the kind of people that you can build a security organization around. And I talk about this as I speak around the country, that oftentimes, you know, some of the best cyber people I know, in fact, I know right today that the three most talented, or three of the five most talented cybersecurity professionals I know, don't have a college degree. And they always say that, well, I spent 4 years, you know, learning how to be an expert rather than going to college and learning things that may not, in fact, be pertinent to my job.
I want to shift over, because we talk a lot about soft skills and hard skills and technical. But, Chris, when you deal with cyber and the acquisition world, and specifically the acquisition world, but maybe the HR too, are you finding that there's still a need for maybe not full-on skills, that technical skills, but at least more than just a working knowledge of, I know the computer plugs into this outlet and hopefully it goes on? I mean, because when it comes to acquisition, that's been another big hole across the government, is having people understanding what it means to be, you know, cyber secure.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point, is that we need to make sure that the folks that we put side by side with Mark's, you know, programmatic folks from the procurement side have a working knowledge, enough technical expertise to be able to help execute a much more agile approach to acquisition than we have in the past. And so right now we've got three or four major initiatives underway where the program folks are sitting side by side with our folks out of management, whether it's the CIO shop, CFO, or chief procurement, and they've got to understand what the business folks are trying to accomplish in order to get farther down the path. And so I think we're doing that more effectively now, but in many of these things, they haven't been done in the past in terms of the kinds of solutions we're bringing to bear. So it's some new ground for all of us.
Chris Kominski is the Deputy Undersecretary for Management at the Homeland Security Department. Mark Weatherford's Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity at the National Protection and Programs Directorate. Our guests on Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio 1500 AM as we focus on the Homeland Security Department. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
The Air Traffic Management Report, provided by Raytheon.
Raytheon is working with the FAA to help them guide and track air traffic more precisely and efficiently. And the entire planet is benefiting, because finding the most efficient way to a destination means lessening aviation's impact on the environment, saving fuel, reducing carbon emissions, and cutting down on noise. Transformation of air travel.
It's happening today.
Look up, and odds are you're looking at something Raytheon makes safer and more capable every day. Because Raytheon technology helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, enabling safer, more efficient air travel by modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow, helping to enable today and tomorrow's air travel. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
A trusted 8A certified firm, Unistar Sparco Computers, is an IT solution provider that offers over 1 million IT products and office supplies. Their experienced sales team efficiently services both CONUS and OCONUS locations. Sparco.com's past performance ranks them with the top 5% of all GSA Schedule 70 contract holders. Additionally, they hold various BPAs and IDIQs as a result of personalized customer care and fast, reliable delivery. Strong partnerships with leading manufacturers enable them to provide the latest technologies available. An Intel Gold technology provider, Sparco.com gives you access to the latest in mobile computing, including Ultrabook, inspired by Intel, a thinner, lighter, faster, and more powerful next generation of laptop computers created with the mobile professional in mind. Because they understand your needs, they have extended their business hours to support you, their government customers. For more information, please contact them at 1-800-840-8400 or visit Sparco.com, S-P-A-R-C-O.com.
Life is long and filled with challenges. Navigating these can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Hi, this is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has been leading military personnel through difficult times to a more secure future with our low-cost life insurance and personal approach. Our policies are available to all members of the armed forces. For a free quote, call 1-877-398-2263 or find us online at AFMA.com today. That's AAF.com.
Mindfully less lonely. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Loneliness is a state of mind, and a small study indicates mindfulness meditation may do something about it in older people. At Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, David Cresswell studied 40 people ages 55 to 85. Half learned and practiced the techniques daily for 8 weeks and spent one day in a retreat. Compared with the other 20 who didn't, the meditators reported less loneliness.
It really is a training program. You have to sort of train your mind just like you might train your biceps in the gym.
Cresswell says loneliness is a risk factor for health problems such as cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's in older people. The study in the journal Brain, Behavior, and Immunity was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012 AUSA Annual Meeting.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is a special edition of Agency of the Month. Our guests today, Chris Kaminsky, Deputy Undersecretary for Management at DHS, and Mark Weatherford, Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity at the National Protection and Programs Directorate. Mark, Chris was talking before the break about acquisition. From an end user's perspective, what would help you execute your mission better in the acquisition area?
Well, I certainly think, you know, the acquisition and procurement process in the federal government is challenged. It takes a long time to do it. And, there's a lot of wickets that we have to meet, and they're all there for good reasons. But, technology simply doesn't wait for years for some of these kind of programs. Moore's Law still applies. And so we have to continue to get better and refine our processes and look for those avenues where we can streamline the acquisition process. It simply is not acceptable to have programs that take multi-years to get them out on the street any longer because technology has passed us by the time that happens.
Well, I'm going to jump to Chris because he did mention a couple initiatives, but let me just a quick follow-up with you, Mark. you guys have gone through, you've worked with GSA on the Smart Buy initiative and some of the situational awareness and stuff like that. Is that kind of the path you're hoping to take to help kind of speed up that process to maybe get some of the vendors who are pre-qualified, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. We're looking for working with whoever we can in the government that we can move these things, get them out on the street faster. And you know, it is a lot of work. You know, we're working on one thing Chris is going to talk about here in just a second, that our staff has been working literally day and night for about 5 months, but we've moved heaven and earth over those 5 months to get something out that really is, I think, is going to be revolutionary.
Are you optimistic that the curve is headed the right direction?
I am optimistic because I'm seeing some wins along the way here. But I'll tell you, it's working with Chris and his team is really what's made it successful. This is not something that we could have done on our own. He is providing us the path and the people that can help us get through those wickets and, you know, look where and identify where the risks are. So, you know, perhaps we're accepting a little bit more risk in some cases than normal, but we have to do that.
Chris, you couldn't ask for a much better setup.
I know, seriously. So heaven and earth. Tell us about that one first.
Nice work, by the way.
Well, we've got great folks over there. I mean, I had Richard Spires on, I'm sure, the department CIO, Peggy Sherry, the CFO, and others who are really experts in their field. And, you know, the mechanisms that we've used in the federal government in the past are not quite as ready to deal with the cyber accelerations that we've got today. So there's a misalignment there. So we're trying to overcome some of those structural difficulties in two areas. As examples, the National Cybersecurity Protection System, of which Einstein is one element of that, looking at, you know, the kinds of detection capabilities that Mark and his teams are really focused on, as well as, you know, continuous monitoring. The White House has been very clear about what we're being measured against in terms of our metrics, and those two major initiatives are really making significant headway. And as Mark indicated, I think we've got a way to revolutionize a lot of what we're doing if we sustain the task over time.
From an Einstein perspective, I know that's something that's been on the books for quite a while. Einstein 1 was the first, you know, piece of it in terms of, I think it was intrusion detection, and then it was intrusion prevention, and then Einstein 3. What are you doing? What is your role with it? And then we'll ask maybe Mark about his role, because I think they're probably two separate roles.
Yeah, our role from the department's perspective is to make sure that we've got, you know, qualified, you know, knowledgeable folks from the procurement shop sitting side by side with the program folks to make sure that we're making the kinds of decisions that will accelerate deployment of these new assets. But it also is, you know, that you've got to factor the finance piece into it always. So it's that loop with the Office of Management and Budget, with the Hill, to make sure that everyone's knowledgeable and up to date on what we're trying to accomplish, and we're all moving in the same direction. So those are the places we tend to interface most directly.
And speaking of Hill, I know, Mark, you guys were one of the few winners when it comes to the CR in terms of money. I know we won't maybe get into that specific line item, but how does your role with Einstein 3 is really to get it pushed out to the agencies or get agencies to begin using it?
Well, both, of course. You know, the Einstein 3 program, which is now called the E3A program, and the A is for accelerated, because we have accelerated the entire program. We really, right after I got here, late last November, we looked at the program as it was going forward, and we basically said, you know what, technology has moved on. We need to figure out an easier a way that we can get this technology, the intrusion prevention technology, out there faster for the federal government civilian agencies. So we came back and working with our other federal partners in DOD, we basically re-engineered the solution from a more of a hardware based platform to a software based platform that's going to be pushed out more broadly, where all federal government agencies can participate in it almost immediately. And it really is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a several-year effort, but we've built the flexibility into the program now where we can accommodate changes in technology into this program.
Mark, I know you have to leave. You have a briefing before too long, and we thank you very much for coming in and being with us for the time that you have been. Before you go, I want to ask you, is it your sense that agencies agencies, including DHS, are starting to become more anticipatory to threats, that they're able to figure out ahead of time where they might be threatened rather than reactionary and going up after the fact and trying to figure out what was penetrated and how?
Well, I would tell you, you know, my years of experience in this business tells me that that's the hardest thing to do. You know, we are by nature reactionary. It's hard to block something that you don't know exists. So technology is helping us in some respects with that. But, you know, DHS is really the leader in the federal government where our NCIC, the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center, is that nexus of information sharing both with the government and with the private sector. So we work very closely with the government agencies in issuing out and getting them threat and vulnerability information so that they can be as proactive as possible. But I think to answer your question, certainly cybersecurity is one of the most visible initiatives in Washington, D.C. right now, at least from my experience. So everybody has their eye on it, and, you know, both in the executive branch and in the legislative branch. So it is getting a lot of attention, and I think it's helping people to be a little bit more proactive than they have been in the past.
Mark, thank you very much for being with us today. We really appreciate your time. Chris, you're going to continue with us as our special edition of Agency of the Month continues in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Chris Kaminsky and Mark Weather of the Homeland Security Department here, along with my colleague Jason Miller. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, most organizations are keenly aware of threats to their cybersecurity perpetrated by malicious insiders. But recently, the internal threat has morphed. More than ever, accidental insiders, individuals who aren't deliberately trying to cause harm, can unknowingly expose an organization and its infrastructure to major risks. How prevalent are these accidental insider threats? What vulnerabilities can they cause? How does legislation and policy affect what organizations can do to mitigate these risks? Listen to The Accidental Insider Threat. Is Your Organization Ready? As part of the Expert Voices panel series, sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton, featuring top industry experts and leaders. Tuesday, October 2nd at 12 noon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen, or visit the Expert Voices website at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
How effective or ineffective has the Obama administration been over the past 4 years? Federal News Radio examines 23 initiatives undertaken by the president, including hiring reform, cybersecurity, and small business contracting. Read our exclusive interview with OMB's Danny Werfel on reducing improper payments, and check out our interactive map of agency data centers. Plus, do green roofs really save money? See for yourself in our exclusive video, The Obama Impact, Evaluating the Last 4 Years, exclusively on federalnewsradio.com. Search Obama Impact.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to Agency of the Month, this month focused on the Homeland Security Department. Our thanks to Mark Weatherford, Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity at NPPD, for joining us. And Chris Kaminsky, the Deputy Undersecretary for Management at DHS, staying with us. My colleague Jason Miller joining in the questioning this afternoon.
Now, I know we've been talking a lot about cybersecurity with Mark here, but let's shift and look more broadly. I mean, cyber is probably a great example of the changes that DHS has made really over the last 3-4 years, maybe 5 years. I mean, at one time, let's be honest, DHS's reputation on cyber was not good. There was a great quote by Congressman Betty Thompson back at probably 2006 time frame that was just basically saying, you're the worst. And at the time, that was a little political theater, I imagine. But at the same time, it was also saying something about what's going on in cyber. So give me a sense of how the change in cyber, how has that really just been a microcosm of really the bigger change across the department?
Yeah, I think that the strengthening and maturation that you're seeing within NPPD, not only with Mark's leadership, but the entire team that he's assembled and the really strong career professionals underneath NPPD is that it's an evolution of the department overall. What you're seeing is really a coming together of folks that are building on other successes that have been there from other folks that have served previously. And so each year we're getting a little bit stronger at the integration and what Secretary Napolitano was called the one DHS effort that we've undertaken the last 3.5 years. So I think that what you're seeing in cyber and, you know, the efforts that we're undertaking around pulling together teams of folks that are multidisciplinary and problem-solving oriented in nature is to really drive toward bringing this department under one roof and really having it function much more effectively.
Those issues are, I imagine, especially important and strike right at the primary area of your influence as a performance improvement officer. What specifically are you trying to do to in that role to make this one DHS vision really happen?
Well, that's a good question. One of the things that we're trying to do is make it much more discernible to the public as to what is success for the department. And so when we walked in the door, there were 185 performance measures that we were looking at. It really weren't tied to any particular, you know, they're programmatic in nature. What we've tried to do over the last several years is with the advent of the quadrennial Homeland Security report is take the QHSR and have those five mission areas really drive the performance metrics for the department. So now we're trying to really get down to about 10 to 15 measurements per goal set. And then really, you know, for aviation security, what is it that we're really trying to do with the money that we get from Congress to, you know, provide good services to the public? And we're applying that across the board.
As the agency matures, are you seeing progress in the areas of each of the components? And agencies understanding that when they are asked to or ordered to do something the way that another agency does it, it's not a reflection on the way they've done things over the years. Is that process improving?
It is improving. I think that we still have growing pains. You know, the secretary recently just issued delegated authorities, like in our case, to Undersecretary Boris for management roles and responsibilities to make it clear that those reside within our directorate. And I think that you're seeing a good level of cooperation. But we do want to, you know, encourage and also recognize the heritage of the Coast Guard, you know, 300 years, and the Secret Service since 1865. And so we really want to, you know, take the good part of each of those entities and say we're not trying to tell you what to do, but from an enterprise perspective, in tight budget times, it does make more sense, you know, for data centers to consolidate, for fleet management to make it much more consolidated so they can spend their limited resources on the frontline mission.
A former DHS official that I spoke to recently said that was one of the biggest challenges that this person dealt with was helping somebody in just whichever one, some component, understand just because we're not going to do it the way you've done it for the recent past doesn't mean that your way's terrible. It just means that this is something that we've decided is a potentially a way for you to realize cost savings, efficiency, or whatever the goal of the particular initiative is.
Yeah, you're really seeing that, I think, in the IT spend. You know, we spend about $6.5 billion a year at the department, but we do want to look for efficiencies and as-a-service offering, whether it's email or mobile platform or other things. And so you're really seeing this sense that as the budget has tightened, you know, it really has become much more readily embraced by the components to say, okay, well, maybe we don't need our own systems for these things, and we can have an enterprise solution that saves money and is just smarter all the way around.
You mentioned the number of performance measurements, and you said 185 at one point, and now you're trying to get down to about 10 or 15. What's the status of that? Have you gotten that far down? And how hard was that process? Because when you start looking at everything you're measuring and say, we don't want to measure that one anymore. Someone invariably goes, no, no, but, you know what I mean? Like, so how'd you get down there?
Well, at times it can be painful. You really got to invest in that. And Deputy Secretary Lute has really led that effort, and her leadership has made it possible for us to keep people at the table on a day-to-day basis. And what it really has said is that, you know, we can't continue to do things the way we may have done in 2005, 2006, and that there are ways to look at this as the mission has evolved, particularly in cyber and elsewhere, that we've got to really be able to make the case to the public that we're spending the money wisely and we're spending it in areas that are going to be easily discernible as to what progress and success looks like. And so we've gotten down to about 75 or 80 of these measures, but it was a grueling process to set aside some of the things that people may have embraced in the past.
As you go through this maturation process or consolidation or whatever you want to call it, streamlining, how much of the resistance that you run into is parochial? I call it the government equivalent of not in my backyard, we're going to do it my way. And how much of the response is an actual business case for, no, wait a minute, we do it this way for a reason, and here's why, and you should consider this before you make a bunch of changes.
Yeah, it's really been interesting to look at this investment life cycle and kind of how we move through things. We're very strong on the right side of that continuum, which is to say on the procurement aspects of it. We know what we're doing. We execute against the FAR, and we're very effective. It's the strategic side on the left and some of the capabilities requirements where we're trying to evolve that, and it's in a couple of areas, like cyber is one of them, aviation, commonality, air frames. You know, do we really need to have 30 different airframes for the department, or can we work with the Coast Guard and CBP to get, you know, down to a smaller set, which will be more efficient in the future? So those are the kinds of things that we're struggling with that we think Congress and the President want to see us tackle.
Chris Kominski is Deputy Undersecretary for Management at the Homeland Security Department, our guest on Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back for one more segment when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
To successfully win and deliver on federal and state health IT initiatives, you need to align with the right strategic partners. Tech Systems Government Services offers dedicated healthcare IT teams who provide practical IT services and IT workforce management expertise to integrators in federal, state, and local governments. Each year, Tech Systems deploys nearly 6,000 specialized government and healthcare IT professionals to support the design, development, and implementation of key programs. From integrated eligibility and health exchange programs for state governments to major initiatives inside civilian and military health organizations, Tech Systems enables you to build stronger IT teams and achieve desired mission outcomes. Whether you support HHS, VA, or MHS programs or programs across all 50 states, Tech Systems' national presence and ability to assemble and manage teams of highly qualified health IT talent can help you win and successfully deliver on mission-critical programs. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com. T-E-K Systems.
Today's Human Capital Management Report brought to you by the Graduate School.
Coordinated training efforts are helping the military build a cyber workforce of the future. General Keith Alexander, the head of Cyber Command, says joint training helps ensure all cyber warriors have the same skills, no matter which branch of the military they work for. The Defense Information Systems Agency tells Federal News Radio it's currently in the process of establishing a workforce development and certification program for DoD cyber professionals.
Training. It's vital when optimizing your organization's limited resources. For over 90 years, federal agencies have counted on Graduate School USA to improve performance with mission-focused training. Graduate School USA offers hundreds of courses and customized programs to help your agency develop the workforce you need for present and future challenges. To learn more, visit graduateschool.edu or call 888-744-GRAD. That's 888-744-GRAD.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies. and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
We're back to wrap up this special edition of Agency of the Month on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Chris Kominski of DHS is here. My colleague Jason Miller joining in on the questioning throughout the program today.
One of the things that is in your portfolio of responsibility as the, I guess, Deputy Undersecretary for Management is San Elizabeth's, the move to the new headquarters. And I know that the Coast Guard is on their way. The other parts of DHS, what is going on with that, with the other parts of DHS?
Sure. You know, we have a really strong master plan that was put into place in 2009, and as the budgets tightened, I think you're seeing that reality spread across all capital projects for the department. The secretary has been committed because I think she recognizes that you know having 50 locations across the NCR is not the best way to manage the department. And so the Coast Guard will go in on schedule in the middle of 13. They've got a new facility there, about 1 million square feet. And in the 13 budget, the president had offered $89 million for interchange, which is going to be essential to moving traffic over there in the future. So I think it was a signal from the White House that we're committed to the long term of St. Elizabeth's. The reality is that we're going to have to put these into smaller blocks. Probably the next tumbler would be the National Operations Center consolidation from 7 or 8 around the NCR down to the one location at St. Elizabeth's. So you're going to be seeing smaller bites that we're going to be offering up and working with the appropriators in OMB to get that done.
Chris, as we wrap up, we only have about a minute left, but shine the crystal ball up a little bit and tell me where you see the areas of emphasis or priority in either any of the things that we've talked about on this program or something that's on the horizon that we haven't had a chance to cover yet.
Sure. I think it's really that continued maturation that the secretary always talks about. And how do you take a good idea that comes out of the component that may not be akin only just to them, but could also be looking at other areas of the department, go to a capabilities and requirements kind of a council and look for areas to strategically position that issue, and then take that into a budget conversation as to how are we going to really present this as a meaningful and viable solution going forward. So it's that continuum that we're going to be focused on.
The idea of connecting the mission and the budget, I mean, it's always happened throughout history in government, but it strikes me that that connection is so much tighter than it's ever been, and that potentially could be a very good thing for not just your agency, but for government as a whole.
Absolutely. If we can get this right in terms of the capabilities and the requirements piece and fuse it with the budget, I think the taxpayer will be better served and the department as well.
We're grateful for your time very much. We really appreciate you coming in today. Also, our thanks to Mark Weatherford, Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity at the National Protection and Programs Directorate. You just heard Chris Kominski. He's Deputy Undersecretary for Management at the Homeland Security Department on this week's Agency of the Month, the special edition sponsored by CenturyLink. You can hear all of our programs at federalnewsradio.com. Search term Agency of the Month. And my thanks to my colleague Jason Miller. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.